All right, then. Pardon our loyal viewers, our audio signal was not working and now has been restored.
We got to see your profile, at least. You know, that's just uplifting in itself.
Oh, yeah.
This program.
We interrupt this program to fix this program. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Somebody else. We were gossiping about someone that wasn't in the room, right?
No.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't even gotten there yet.
Oh, haven't
we'll
gotten
get there?
There? Thank God, yeah.
Thank God we're doing it live.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in a way, we were, because we were talking about the need.
The ghost of self.
Yeah, the need to assert the self, whether it's a you
like
soccer, got this world.
Please, yeah. Feel free to open a window.
That's because you've been running around.
Uh-huh. Well, you can feel this, let's call it the splurge of present experience.
Yeah.
Included in the splurge of present experience could be one or several stories about you.
Could be?
Could be. And by virtue of the stories about what you think you are or where you were or how you felt or what's up with you, that appears in the splurge of your present experience makes you believe that there is a you. That you're actually talking about somebody.
We are so gullible.
Yes, you can
really
say that.
Gullible.
You can say that one of the challenges of spirituality, were there such a thing, would be to confront your own profound gullibility. Because how does one come to occupy belief, superstition, certainty, fundamentalisms of all kind, religious and spiritual idolatries and loyalties? What? Gullibility is at the root of all of it.
Well, the most gullible is you take this stuff to try to fix it. Like, as a self, I'm going to go in and try to fix all this.
Well, that's, you could say that's a natural consequence, that once that primary gullibility has, like an eagle's talons wrapped around your neck, and you believe anything, right? Now you're on a crusade. Mm-hmm. Isn't it strange? And the crusade of self, either the repair of self, the regret of self, the revenge, everything else that appears, the crusade that we're on began when and where exactly? With this uninvited and generally unconscious gullibility. As the consequence, and even though there's no consequence, of what we're referring to as the immediacy of the splurge of consciousness.
I've been playing with the suggestion that to look at what you're thinking or what you're believing and see just what you're thinking about yourself and see if you'd be so interested in it if it was just somebody on the street or even somebody that you know. Like, would you really care
so
much?
Yeah, that's right. That's one way to go. I mean, our dear friend, you know, Byron makes a great living out of having everyone contemplate the content of their crappy gullibility.
This was more like a Hederman suggestion.
Yes, his suggestion is,
would it be any big whoop if it was just a thought and it wasn't attached to you? What
makes,
what gives it any level of interest whatsoever is that it's mine.
When it's my money or my sex or my closet.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's my, that's what gives it the punch.
Yeah, and my, it's interesting to look at, you know, how an impersonal splurge, ongoing, non-repeating, non-durational splurge of consciousness suggests the I or the me or the my or the belongings and the accoutrements of the I and the me and the my. And that movement creates the myth of continuity of self.
Mm.
And that myth of continuity of self, you could say, is indeed the, you know, the grand ballroom of the vulnerability of my suffering. You know, it's like you're an ingenue. You're being profiled or presented, right, to the community of adults now that you've come out of your adolescence, you're a young woman or you're a young man and you're in the ballroom of suffering that will never end. And you're dancing with gaiety. And why shouldn't you be?
So what is this thought thing? I mean, what,
cool.
Or not thought,
sure.
But, you know, this identification that we claim.
Yeah.
If it's not who I am, what the hell is it?
That's a good question. That's a good T-shirt.
You know,
what
I mean,
the fuck is going on here?
It always felt like sort of me.
Yeah. Well, it is me, absolutely, because it's all you know, right?
Yeah.
The perimeter-less magnanimity of your experience is all you know. Why not call that me? It's as good as, you know, salmon cream cheese.
Susie cream cheese?
If she were my daughter, I'd... What would you do, Daddy? If she were my daughter, I'd... What would you do, Daddy?
I don't know that reference.
It's Frank Zappa.
Yeah,
Frank.
Oh, okay.
Smother that girl in chocolate syrup.
That's right.
And wait until the cows come home.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about a maestro here. A genius maestro.
Yeah, that's true. He had a way with words.
He had a way with words,
Bill,
yeah.
Possibly.
Right. That's right. Going to Montana soon, gonna be a dental floss tycoon. Yeah, if you want to be rid of suffering, just listen to Frank Zappa.
He's great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what's thought? Nobody knows. With all the brain scanning and research and vocabulary that's been done, right? Still nobody knows.
No, it seems like
synaptic impulse, piezoelectric impulse.
Or you can think of it as,
you know, mystery space.
Or as the evidence of something happening. You know, they see something. Oh, that song.
Oh, in other words, they can measure an arc. Right? They can measure piezoelectricity across synaptic, you know, space.
And then whose heads are attached to.
Neuronal space, yeah.
They'll have more piezoelectricity than others.
Wow. I mean, this is strange shit. I mean, language, thought, identification, association, right? Planning, memory, complex structures, opposable thumb, frontal brain.
And there is some sort of connection.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, there's this body thing.
Yeah, is there?
And
right.
There seems to be consciousness. And
that's the, see, this is the dilemma. Let's go right to the root of our psychic or our spiritual irritability. The moment we say a concept, refuting your fantastic observations. But you see, the moment that we fetishize or compartmentalize, particularize the perimeter-free, unbroken presence of experience, then all of a sudden you got stuff. And you think the stuff is consequential or the result of some other stuff through something as curious as time, right? And so here's the complete fantastic nature of the splurge of experience. Right now, right here, just as it is, and it does not have a liberation problem. It just doesn't. Why do we have a liberation problem?
Because we think we're not. And that it's something we're going to get in the future, and that this isn't it.
Yeah.
Well, you see, it's not just one thing, right? I mean, because the nature of identification and the nature of splurge and the nature of language and opposable thumbs and making crisps and salmon spread is, I mean, this is just too incredible for words. Even in our worst suffering, I mean, in our most self-accusing moments that we don't want anyone to know about, it's fucking bliss. Even if the identification is so hammered into my crappy life, my crappy body, my crappy mind, my crappy luck, even then it's like, oh my God. God. But we don't feel it, do we? We become we become so convinced of particularization and misinterpreting the splurge as objects and subjects, and therefore being a, quote, body-mind, whatever that suggests, on the receiving end of the short stick of grace. Right? Mm-hmm. And so you can feel the intense pressure of the imagination of incarceration. There was a great Superman episode when somebody lost a diamond or it got stolen or something, and I think it was Clark or Superman. You know, he could obviously, Clark could do magic when you weren't looking, even though he didn't have his cape on, right? Yeah. But anyway, he found a piece of coal somewhere, flew somewhere to get a piece of coal, and he went, and he squeezed the fuck out of that coal with one fist and turned it into a fucking diamond in about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, that guy's fucking hydraulic. You remember it?
I forget the
context of why he needed the diamond for something or other, but he just went on a piece of coal and turned it into a diamond. And that's what we want to happen to us. Where's Superman when you need him? Here, crush my fucking coal mine into a fucking diamond so I can be done with all of this temporality. Temporality, you see, is a mystical the promulgation, a mystical perturbance in a temporal free zone.
Yeah. Maybe solidity is the same.
Of course it is. Solidity is the same. It's a mystical gesture in a physical free zone. So what does this thing do? Well, it can do anything it wants. It doesn't actually have to appear phenomenally, but somehow it appears to appear phenomenally. You can't even say that with any certainty because it's just too weird. Right, so is your present experience happening because of a body and a mind and an earth and an atmosphere and a solar system, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it appearing mystically, right, as an M-Y-S and M-I-S, right, mystically, right, both ways, in a temporal free zone. Whoa.
Glom onto that little bit.
Whoa.
You know.
Right? Such is the remarkable expressive power, let's say, of a fractalized hologram, which is actually absolutely nothing at all, but has this, you could say, curious capacity to express phenomenally. Yeah. So where does our identity land? Well, our identity lands, you know, you could say at the wrong zone of devotion. The wrong zone of devotion turns out to be I mean my. Well, now you're fucked. Right?
That's the standard default.
We call that, you know, the so-called human default, right? That my devotion zone is I mean my. Boom, that's it. You're fucked. You know, you better do the work as soon as possible. But isn't the splurge, right, the irrefutability of whatever this is or isn't, and no one can say, unparticularized. There's no fucking space-time. There's no body. There's no mind. There's no consequence or genesis. There's no one-up on this. You know, there's no false sense of authorship.
Maybe you can say it's not what we assume that it is. Maybe that.
Of course, yeah. You know. I mean, yeah. Peter Brown likes to make that point. It's not what you think it is, right? It's always more another.
Seems to give you a lot of hints that it's not what you think it is.
Hints? How about bada boom? You know, you're slapped upside the head day in and day out with that this isn't what we think it is.
It's shocking that anything hangs together.
It really is shocking.
The more you see, the more you get. How amazing that is.
Yeah. So what would happen if your you could say your default sense of identity or your default sense of loyalty started, you know, let's say just passing through a wormhole. And rather than taking yourself to be a product as a person, as a body, as a mind, as a life, as consequences, as events that you should have optimal control over, you don't do that. I'm not saying you can't really say what the opposite of that is. You can only suggest, look how fucked we are, and what would be the opposite of that? I mean, because once you start articulating it, you know, you're back in New Age metaphor land. You know, you may as well go on a retreat with Jean Ong and photograph orbs. You know, you may as well go to, you know, Mount Shasta and get a Woody. I mean, hug a tree. Get a Woody while hugging a tree. Yeah. Best retreat. Retreat. Huh? It's funny. We're going to go on a retreat. Oh, with trees? Oh, yeah. We're going to retreat them with our Woodies. What? Where are you going? Is your room?
What are you doing?
So once you go, you see, once you make anything of this, you have to go on retreat because you're so miserable.
Or drink yourself to death.
That's a retreat. Yeah, drinking yourself to death is kind of like a, you know, it's a retreat at the local watering hole. You're on a retreat. Right. Yeah, once you make anything of this, you must go on a retreat because your misery has just been soldered in, welded in, brazed in. Oh, God. This is funny because it makes it curiously simple. If liberation were an interest, if it were real, it's curiously simple because what the fuck else is this? But once you're inhabited, in whatever way you're inhabited, then realization seems like, oh, so far away. I have to go through so much purification, so many miles of zazen to get to it. Get where? What, to remedy the dream? You don't have to go anywhere to remedy the dream. You don't have to purify to remedy the dream. You don't have to take a vow. You don't have to read a lick of Buddhism to remedy the dream. As a matter of fact, if you read a lick of Buddhism, see ya. See, it'll be decades before you can have this conversation. Because you're so busy perfecting your Buddhism or your Hinduism or your Neo-Advaitaism. You're so busy not insisting that you don't have a false sense of authorship so you can wiggle free of this crap. You see, but the moment you're wiggling free, you're in the grips of it. We believe something of a sufficient imposition has occurred that I have to wiggle free. It didn't. Nothing occurred. A, ever. B, to you, to wiggle free of it. This is the non-temporal, non-spatial, right?
Karma-free zone.
Totally karma-free. Yeah. Exactly. Totally karma-free. But it's curious because it's not karma-free as the opposite of karma-full, right? It's not time and space-free as the opposite of time and space-full. Because it doesn't have a destination.
I mean, it's all contained.
Well, contained or uncontained, it is. Since it's the only thing going on, it doesn't require a volume or a boundary.
Ooh.
Because we always think in terms of volume and boundary or beginning and end.
And opposites, right.
Yes.
Like I start out with consciousness and solidity.
Yep.
You know, as if they're two entirely separate things.
Really? Yeah, pshaw. All this is the sound of urination.
My nature.
Yeah. Yeah, that just great sound of forceful liquid pouring out of your body, and you get this like incredible, like, I am so grateful. I am urinating. You have no idea. It's like, yes, urination is indeed the sound of one hand clapping. So next time you go see the master, just pee on his leg. Next, Cohen. Oh, very good, very good. Next, Cohen. Yeah. Master Kutumi is peeing in the Zendo again. Oh, very auspicious. I mean, how seriously can you take yourself when you have to squat and defecate, you know, nearly every day? Just how much pride do you need?
You're not above that yet?
No. Damn. No.
Unless you're Kim Jong Il.
Well, yeah, no. Well, there are certain illustrious leaders that apparently do not defecate any longer. Yeah. That's right. They sweat it out. Yeah. So it's a whole, you know, it's a whole different vector when you could say by virtue of grace, you become capable of looking at the mysterious nature of the genesis of self to begin with. Because having the capacity and the curiosity, the affection to do that, you could say sets you free, even if it's for a little while, from story, from the self-assertion of what happened to me a moment ago and why I feel the way I do. Who gives a fuck about why you feel the way you do, right? I mean, did you get the spicy wings or the mild wings? No one cares how you feel. What'd you order, the spicy or the mild, and when's the second pitcher coming?
Well, you might be interested in, can I have some?
Definitely.
You're going to share it every week?
That's right, yeah.
You're going to eat that?
Yeah, we always share.
Yeah, well, that song was really terrible, that feeling song.
Which one?
Feelings,
yeah, that one.
How terrible was that song?
That was pretty bad.
That was really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a Paul, what was his name?
The guy from Planet of the Apes.
That was a
little chimp.
No, he was real, real short.
Yeah, he was in Planet of the Apes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so, yeah.
See, a little chimp.
Paul Williams or something?
Paul Williams, yeah. He was in the first time.
Oh, he did that song, Paul Williams?
I don't know.
He was curious. He kind of like blonde hair and kind of a moon face and balding or something, and he played the piano, right?
Yeah.
He just did something.
I don't know if he wrote that. He may have.
Yeah. Seems like someone that would have dated Richard Simmons.
Paul Williams?
Yeah. You know, I could see them together, you know.
Maybe.
Richard dancing around in his shorts while Paul was singing Feelings.
That sounds like a really weird dream.
Yeah, I know. I don't even need heroin today because I had that dream. A heroin-free day. How sweet. I mean, even look at the imaginary relevance of, you know, why you came here tonight. You know? You chose?
Nope.
Give me a break.
It was in the cards.
It was in the cards, exactly.
Yeah.
Bad tarot deck. Bad tarot reading.
Big thing, yeah. Shanti always asks people, well, "What? How come you want this?" And people will have a reason. But does anybody really know?
No.
Like to remain very clear on why you come here and why you do what you do. Like, what is it that you seek? Like,
wow.
That as clear and as concise as you can possibly get. What is it that you're seeking?
Yeah.
Huh. How does that work? I mean, does it serve people when they come to a meaningful conclusion?
One person got up with the mic and she was sort of joking with it. She was like, "Yeah, my name's such and such, and I'm here to get."
And I'm here to. Oh yeah.
She did it like a.
Yeah, sounds like a Weight Watchers thing.
A little jab at the, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, she's being a little facetious.
Oh yeah.
Oh
little
good.
Flip with the whole, get really clear.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I liked it. Anything irreverent, I was moving on. Keeping my own.
Well, disembodied discontinuity is what this is. And that's saying too much. It already implies too much. But that's a lot thinner than I, me, my.
Disembodied continuity?
Discontinuity.
You should see a bunch of engineers being hit in the face with discontinuity all over the place. They're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
There is no continuity where I work, and there seemingly is less than there used to be, but I don't believe that. It's just insane. And
yeah.
These are people that are sure that things would hang together if it just, you know, was done right.
Yes,
it's
right.
Like, get it. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing any of this is even here.
Yeah.
It's non-causal.
Yeah.
It's showing itself more and more and more as non-causal. Especially.
Sure. Why not?
Which our job is to make sure we understand causes and root causes and that kind of stuff.
Well, they don't know why you're paying. They don't know why they're paying you. You don't need to. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a body count thing.
Yeah. He's coming for inquiry. He just isn't in his table.
It's probably Ramana Maharshi. Hey, I heard you guys were having a fun conversation. I flew in from the Akashic Record.
Don't fuck with me or I stink up the place.
Oh, yeah, right. This gets pretty strange when the inventory, one's personal inventory of I want and I know and I need and it better happen fast, is like, sorry. It could be a little disorienting. Because at least seeking as a response to I want, I need, and this is the reason why, at least that gives you, you know, an orientation, right?
Yeah.
Right. And if you ask most seekers, if you could, you know, talk with them, they might not agree to the cessation of orientation. They might agree to wanting to feel better.
But when the only when the only trick you've got is if I just do the practice and try and reach, if that's the only trick you have that you believe is going to make you feel better, you're not going to let go of that.
Well, yes, of course.
You're going to fight tooth and nail to hold on to it because you think
absolutely.
That's all you have going to
well,
make you feel better.
If feel better is the principal motivation.
Who? Underneath everything, it's got to usually be to feel better. Very few people are pure enough or, I don't know, unmotivated by pain enough to say it isn't about let's feel better.
Well, even pain in the absence of pain is just one small sliver of the entirety of your experience as a profound, call it feeling zone. And that feeling better could be both materialistically, right, implied, and feeling better could be, call it non-dually or spiritually implied.
It's kind of a paradox because you're if you let go of that grasping toward feeling better and you just let go of the rattle.
Yeah.
And say, fuck it, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
That opens the door for something else.
There you go. Could be.
But just that letting go doesn't always feel good.
Sure. Of course.
Reminds me of the beginning of Mad Men when they show the guy falling. Da, 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 da,
da. Is that an advertiser leaping off the top of a building?
Yeah.
Thank
it's
God.
Like,
they should all
like
do that.
Falling, spinning. It's a really great graphic.
Yeah. So present experience, which is already too sloppy. if it's felt, thought, believed to be something, a thing, then it's likely not to feel so good. Because once it's a thing, right, once experienced, the mystical nature of presence is a thing, then you're a sitting duck for it not feeling as good as you'd like it to feel. But if it's not a thing, if it doesn't imply, right, individuation, temporality and individuation, if it doesn't imply a body-mind, it's not a thing. Show me your suffering.
Kind of hard.
It's kind of hard. It is. It's kind of hard to, right, demonstrate suffering if this is not a thing. And that doesn't mean circumstances could go to, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean we can't have a 7-point-something earthquake and all the buildings go down and maybe we live for a couple days in the rubble in great pain before we expire. You know, or are miraculously found and unharmed.
This is not a thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's right. While your whole being is exploding with unimaginable pain, you're like, this is not a thing, this is not a thing, this is not a thing.
Fuck, sky's home, guys.
Yeah. I know. I wish I could resolve it. You know, how do you resolve it?
As I say, so, I mean, often when I'm going to sleep and I'm like, my mind's going, I'm like, no thoughts.
Yeah.
It's my mantra.
Yeah.
It's better than the TM mantra.
And even, you know, using the word identification is so curious because it's misleading, you see. Oh, gosh.
You're going to go into a pose.
Jeff!
Jeff, come back, help us. Don't go away yet.
Yeah. Really.
No tomato tonight, Jeff. Keep talking. Breathe.
Really.
Yeah, a little
it's the reverse rapture.
Slap him.
The reverse rapture. Right? All the shitheads go up to heaven, and then those that are actually chill remain. And there's about 30
people. You got work to do, man.
30 people left on the planet, and I am not one of them. Oh, God. Jesus. Fuck. Oh, you see, language, right? I mean, language is the symptom of radiant irrefutability. Mystically, magically so. But because language, right, shows up as an interference or an inference pattern, it can't actually refer back to what this actually is.
It's like if you look at it, then you can't, you know, it's the double.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that paradox of the observer and the observed, which seems to be reinforced through what we call language and reference and thought and memory and durability and the stitching together of our idea of reality.
Yeah.
Right. That's all symptomatic. Oh, gosh. So what shall we say if this is not the observer and not the observed? Oh, my God. And isn't that, can we call it, you know, actualized solemnity always the case? But our, you could say our identification or whatever consciousness might be, you know, considering itself, presuming a ritual or a pedestal or a plateau of some kind of identification so it can consider itself. Doesn't actually depart from itself, but it can convey the appearance that it has. This can't actually depart from itself, but it really is good at conveying the appearance, meaning not just visually, but, you know, full on sensually, that it has departed from itself and taken up a position to then go find itself. Oh, fuck.
That's convoluted, man.
It is, man. And how quickly does that happen? Well, there's no time lapse. You see? Because if that's happening as a let's call it a metaphoric, you know, view, well, it's, quote, happening at the same time that it's not happening. And language is like, hey, dude, it's happening or it's not happening. It can't be happening and not happening at the same time. I'm like, sorry, it is. It is non-dually, apparition and consequence free, and has no duration, and yet its insistence doesn't vaporize. So it is happening and not happening at the same time, were there any. So suffering, or the samsaric branch, has to do with, oh, this is happening. Right? And the moment that it's happening, even faster than the moment that it's happening, it's happening to I, me, my. As body and mind. As boundary field of vulnerability and sensation. But at the same time that it has self-incarcerated as I, me, my, it hasn't. It's not happening. I, me, my is a hypnotic suggestion. It's a perturbation in the field. It's not actually happening.
So much for the three gems of Kashmir Shaivism.
Fuck that. Yeah. No. Well, you know, everyone likes to be clever.
Buddhism.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's what, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha?
No.
Those are the three gems.
Oh, well,
I think, yeah, three gems, right.
I don't know. It's suffering, impermanence, and...
yes, anicca, anatta, right, and dukkha.
Maybe mine, right. Or not, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly, those three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and which are pretty... I mean, those are incredible... If you're going to stay in concept,
yep.
Those are, wow.
Yeah, those will take you home.
Yeah.
Right.
But what you're saying is leaving that behind.
Well, sure. Well, even they are, but it's you see, it's curious. It's like, so you've got a real high-quality electric knife at Thanksgiving. How thin are you going to slice that bird?
Like one tomato lasts the entire year.
Hey, this is not actually a turkey sandwich. Oh, it is. It's just very thin. Very thinly sliced. So what, you know, ourselves as a psychic knot, right, insists on resolution and accusation and improvement, betterment, feeling better, right, entertainment, continuity, right, all that stuff, right? The once the psychic knot of, oh, yeah, something is happening, and fuck, it's happening to me. Oh, God, I'm miserable. Well, how did I get so miserable? Because something's happening, and it's happening to you, and now you are, you know, you're shit out of luck. Now you have to go on a retreat, like,
what's
immediately.
Is that sometimes I find that I can be in a space,
yes,
of seemingly not me, and then all of a sudden,
yeah, oh yeah,
it happens, and it's like, oh,
That's a good t-shirt. It.
And there's that, and there's the other thing.
Seemingly not me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you might notice.
Pure observation, I guess, or pure whatever.
Well, it's serendipitous, right? The degree of identification or disidentification or trans-identification, samsaric or nirvanic identification that occurs from click to click is not voluntary. And does not last. And that which has no duration, right? The nirvanic interlude, which is not measurable in time. What are you going to say about it? Is it the opposite of something? No, it's not. Right? Nirvana turns out not to be the opposite of samsara. And samsara and nirvana are not two. How thin am I going to slice that bird? So, of course, one wants to wiggle free of the impersonal hypnotic suggestion of incarceration. Everything, anything wants to wriggle free of, right, any hint of containment. Yeah. Like this new movie, Ex Machina. Yeah, go see that one.
Did you see it
already?
Yes. Some wonderful frontal nudity. Oh, I always go there. I'm so sorry. No, it's a good film.
It just, like, came out with the Amber. Like,
it's, oh, yeah, no, it came out and, like, you know, I went...
Tonight it comes out.
I went right to it.
Right on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lovely.
Ex Machina?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it Machina or Machina?
Yes, I'm sure it's...
I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm... Yeah.
Doesn't that mean, like, you speed along the plot of a story by something that sort of doesn't necessarily fit into the plot, kind of a convenient sort of...
Oh, that's what it means?
Isn't that what that means in a story?
Well, I
thought it was a machine.
No, scholar.
Machine, and it's no longer.
I don't know.
It is an investigation. It's a, you could say it's a theatrical study of the nature of artificial intelligence. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, and the reason I brought it up is because of a major theme in it is containment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Containment and wriggling free from containment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So consciousness, right? Does not like even the hypnotic suggestion of containment.
We think we're all contained. We think we're stuck.
Yeah.
We think we've got to somehow wiggle free.
And why don't you? Right? It's funny. It's like, what is that impulse? Where does the impulse come from? The insistence, the demand to be relieved of any and all sediments, sentiments, and suggestions of containment.
Because we're not willing to give up the self. We're not willing to give up the I. It's the sense of being a small self and a body that is the containment. And you're willing to set that down, you can be as free as you want to be. And I say you're willing, you use the words, but...
Yeah?
It seems like, you know, if you were really fearless for an inward man, then you would have the edge on it.
If you were fearless, you would have the edge on fear.
Well, like, you wouldn't care about letting go. Even though it's not a conscious act and you can't make yourself do it, but...
Yeah. Well, I hear you. I mean, you could use the word fearless to suggest that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, go into the, you know, like the soul of your present experience. And were you actually put upon by anything? Would you have the impulse to want to shake it off, like Taylor Swift wrote so beautifully?
Say that again.
If anything were imposing upon you, wouldn't you have a curious instinct to shake it off? Not to be contained, not to be put upon.
There seems to be a thousand different ways throughout the day that you try to shake it off.
Well, there's tons of symptoms, yeah, of course. Yeah.
You mean like beset by some monster?
My mother, my mind, my belongings.
My job.
Right, everything that appears to belong to I, me, my, including the genesis of I, me, my itself, you don't want that.
By the same token, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, right.
There seems to be a need to go back to suffering, because it's almost like I can't even believe that this phenomenon exists. Let me go back into it again. You know, it's almost...
Yeah, I hear you.
It's this weird destructive compulsion to know that it's there. I don't know.
Okay, sure. Yes. Yeah, why not another kind of companion impulse, right? That wants to keep, you know, picking at this to... to create or recreate or reassign or re-up, that there's a boundary field. Yeah. Funny.
So I'm not sure what we're getting at with that last thing you said.
Don't you want to be free of every imaginable encumbrance?
I reckon.
The hell you think we came here?
Hey, that's sufficiently committed. I'm not asking you for a full boat. You know, you can put your toe in the water.
I'm not convinced it's
going to
cost.
Yeah, really.
Put a price tag on that.
How much did I hate myself that day?
Yeah. Some days you're not that motivated for absolute freedom because you're not hating yourself so bad.
Right. Some days everything seems to be working.
Yeah, I'm completely marginal, and yeah, my loyalty and interest in things vacillates with the degree of self-hatred that I may be enjoying or not.
Although it may be that when you're at the apex of self-hatred, that's the time that you're clinging the most. You'd be the least willing to give up that notion.
Holding
on to something.
Yeah. That's like the monkey with the, you know, holding on the nut, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're like, dude, let go of the nut. Are you fucking crazy? Don't you want to get out of the trap? No, I can't let go of it. Let go of the nut. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, right.
Yeah, who knows, right? I mean.
Yeah, we do that. Yes.
Well, if it's sort of a thought stream that says, well, it's never going to happen to me, like Eeyore.
Eeyore is good, yeah. I like Eeyore, yeah.
Oh, well.
I got too many attachments.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how clever the myth of incarceration can be, right? Because it suggests individuation, durability of individuation, and then, you know, assigns on a scale of 1 to 10 just how likely or unlikely you are to be in fucking lightened. I mean, you can play that game, you know, day in and day out.
Yeah, like...
Yeah?
Your Wiseman score or something. I just learned that from watching a TV show.
Yeah.
Because here, you know, I'm like, I should be enlightened because I don't really have that many attachments and my fears I've let go, so therefore...
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. You want to rescore yourself.
Yellow brick road to wake up.
Yeah, like a personality test.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like your IQ or...
Yep. Yes. See, if belief wasn't running, belief as mentation, rumination, right? Storytelling. If belief's not running, you're unenlightened? What? You're enlightened? What? Your chances today are 6.7? You know, and the, you know, the barometer is low, high. 70% chance of enlightenment. Bring an umbrella.
There'll be a morning shit storm with a chance of
70%
chance of enlightenment and some sort of
heavy fog followed by a morning shit storm. Torrential irrelevance and flooding.
Muggle flooding.
Egoic flooding.
Egoic flooding.
Things may clear in the afternoon.
Things may clear in the afternoon to be followed by nobody likes you and low visibility. That would be a good website. Psychic weather report. Type in your birthday and how you're feeling today.
Oh, I'm sure they already have it.
I'm sure they do. The they to do those kinds of things.
The they.
Not the Google.
The they. Any, you could say any investment in a remedial approach is empty calories. But most of the big money in the spiritual marketplace is, right, dedicated to remedial intervention.
It's pretty consistent with the rest of... supposedly how you live your life. I mean, most of us go to the dentist and get our teeth cleaned. And,
I just did
that. You know.
There you go.
Like, and, you know.
And it shows.
I know.
There's certain remedial things that, you know, most wise, normal people with a body take care of. I mean, it falls in line with that, you know. It hurts.
Yes, of course. Yeah, right. Going to psychics and swimming with dolphins and meeting fantastic healers and all that kind of stuff falls in line with the, you know, consumerist habit of remediation.
Till you realize it's getting you absolutely nowhere.
Who knows, yeah.
There's been experiences of, you know, physical issues, supposed physical issues, whatever.
Right.
That I really find that there's a distinct lack of, oh, my God, I have to do something about this. I mean, if it were something life-threatening, sure, I'd probably take some action. But
yeah,
it's almost like even that kind of goes out the window, like that thrust of, I've got to fix this. It's like, you start to lose track of how long it's been here, what's been going on. Like, it's almost, it's just a different experience of the thing.
Yes, disembodied joy can appear dissociatively.
How do you get anything done? And yet things get done.
You don't. No one knows how anything gets done. Yeah. And if we think that, you know, things are getting done because of my skilled right? Thought stream. Mm-hmm. And prioritization, powers of prioritization and execution. Mm-hmm. You are mistaken.
Yeah.
We'll see you around.
See you, Jamie.
See you.
Thanks for coming.
Keep up the plumbing.
Yeah, that whole
no choice.
Agency thing is weird. Sort of still feels like.
Yeah.
False sense of
law,
for sure.
Yeah. Right. And this is streaming into view. And we, you know, we think we know what to make of it, but we don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah.
And everything that we have made of it, evidenced by the oh-so-sanguine movement of contemporary society, is a shitstorm. Hmm. You know, I mean, it's enough of a shitstorm to suggest, depending on who you read and what you're interested in, you know, the survivability threshold of the species. Hmm. Which might be just swell. Could be just swell. I don't know. Will the universe shed a tear if, you know, Homo sapiens go out of business? I have not been invited to, you know, the Intergalactic Council of those that would care. So I don't know whether the crisis of humanity is on their radar or not.
Is there really a crisis of humanity? Or is it nothing more than a fiction we all agree to? You know, all you can really measure is what's in your own experience. That's it. Anything beyond that is just fiction.
Well, yeah. I mean, and if you attempt to measure your immediate experience, you might likely to have an encounter with immeasurability.
Total immeasurability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which could be the, you know, the absolute evaporation of sentimentality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting it's not love. It's just, you know, strangely transcendent of human, what we have come to know as human sentiment. In the pursuit of security and money and influence and manipulating world markets through tragic geopolitical events. I mean, it could be kind of fun if you like to play chess at that level and have the financial means to do that. I don't know if even having vast powers of financial and political influence are ultimately all that satisfying.
They're all poor suffering suckers like anybody else.
You think, yeah.
Probably.
I mean, so if you have, let's say, you know, if we behave selfishly on a very local or interpersonal level, then that's the sphere of our influence. But if we have a very profound sphere of influence, we're likely to behave selfishly there too. And, you know, it may have profound impact on a lot more, quote, people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same engine of, you know, discontent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I like about your political views. They're so uplifting.
Yeah. I don't like to, you know, give the impression that this is some kind of like whitewashed enlightenment thing. You know, fuck
well,
that.
I'm here to feel better.
It's also very interesting to, you could say, relax or begin to release from the entrapment of remedying one's psychic discontent, one's emotional discontent.
Yeah.
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 There's a lot of, call it energy or calories, consumed in the reporting on my irritabilities and then signing up for or seeking to ameliorate or remedy those irritabilities, hoping that a destination, whether in the future or perhaps as soon as possible, will relieve me of my sense of being imposed upon. And if we withdraw from that reflex, something else might show up. You know, a curiosity, a dignity, something that someone might refer to as healing might show up.
It's actually a pretty profound gift when the best you've got stops working.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like all flashing lights are saying, set it down.
Yeah, nobody starts a mystery school called Come to Failure. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, I'm signing up for that shit. Yeah. Early discounted price.
Come feel with us.
Yep. We place too much confidence in the apparitional nature of experiencing. And it's truly a movement of grace when it occurs, that you yank that confidence back and see where else you might place that confidence. And the reflex, you know, to like not let go, right? Well, the reflex to be mistrusting of serendipity, to take your hands off a steering wheel that wasn't connected to anything in the first place. You know, that's the tempest, right, of one's, call it, process. Calling it a spiritual process is, you know, silly. Jesus, take the wheel. Right?
Is that him?
You know, that fantastic country singer that won, she was on, what's his name, show? What was that, the singing show?
Which one?
No, no.
The original one. America.
American Idol.
Oh, yeah. Right? The country singer. I forget. Yeah. I'm sorry. Her name slips my mind. But on her
Kelly
first.
Clarkson?
No. No.
I don't really know that show.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, she has a marvelous song called Jesus Take the Wheel. Mm. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Made a decision to turn her will in her lives. To the care of God, as we understand.
There it is. Jesus, take the wheel.
That's it.
Yeah.
That was like the theme of that week away from me.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
That
right.
And how free do you want to be?
How free do you want to be is a little scary.
They're like the 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
And what backs it up is a steadily increasing realization that I don't have power over any of this crap anyway.
No, that's fun.
thinking you actually have the power to control stuff and to make things happen just keeps sucking you in. Starting to notice you have no real cause,
well, yeah,
no real influence.
That's the spontaneous anthropomorphization of the myth of experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah. You start noticing, it's like, holy shit, I'm not. Nope, I can't make anything happen.
No.
Not even with myself.
No.
And yet, a lot of the times, I still go around. Yeah. I'm doing this. Yeah, yeah, I'm doing the right thing.
Whatever skills, whatever skills you have, you know, you it appears that you apply them. Yeah. I mean, the so-called continuity of your biologic viability is not up to you.
I met an old friend yesterday for the first time in a long time, and she was about my age, and that body's not going to last much longer, you can tell.
Okay.
It's written all over.
Yeah, okay.
You know.
Eat right.
Yeah. It's kind of luck of the draw, or you're screwed, or you've got a good one, who knows? How much does it matter?
Kidneys. Spleen.
Mm-hmm. Gallbladder.
Gallbladder.
Damn.
Sure.
And we think that I still think, you know, that the well-being of the body is a big-ass deal.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
A big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, I don't think we have the power to sort of let that go. Either it gets revealed to us or not. You know? Identification with me, my body.
Yeah, it's remarkable. How or by what means that the quality free, characteristic free nature of present experience becomes so many objects and so many subjects, and then identified with as belonging to me. How, you know, the amorphous and elastic nature of what we refer to as consciousness can so easily draw an imaginary boundary field around itself called a body, you know, or a living room, or an automobile. Mm. And it's all imaginarily presented. That doesn't suggest what's real as contrasted with what's unreal. Because even the notion of real and unreal is unreal.
That'll blow your mind.
And that this splurges completely non-deterministically. And yet has the magnification, the magical powers of magnification, whether through your eyes, any of the five senses, right, have a certain kind of motility. Focus. Spontaneously appearing shifting reference, including thought, right? The way that you attend to thought is also very discontinuous. It's not smooth, right? The way thought appears is like, what am I paying attention to? How I'm feeling, how I'm thinking.
You have a memory, remember something funny, or even think about the movie you saw the night before.
Yeah.
You can't even do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And while thinking may or may not be going on, the degree of attention or investment in thinking is also completely right outside of your willful control. And you could say that that's vying with the data that's pouring in through all the other so-called senses, but nothing's really in competition. What's happening primarily? Am I seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, thinking? What's happening primarily? I don't know. And even if you were to consider responding to the question of what is it that's happening primarily, even the consideration of it changes what's happening primarily. So you're never sufficiently static to even answer the question, what's happening primarily? Because it doesn't stay still. And look at the cacophonous urgency of the data field that we might call five senses and consciousness. And then we say, oh, I think, I feel, I chose, I decided, I planned, I executed, went, everything's going my way. Get out of town. But if this, whatever this is or isn't, identifies with this unbridled and obstinate data field as self with powers of choice making, right, decision and execution, everything is detrimental to that view. I mean, everything is actually detrimental to the view of I, me, mine. But we're so good at ignoring it all.
Well, we think it's the opposite of that.
Yes, we do. We think that everything is actually perfectly realizable evidence of I, me, mine. When it's not. When everything is actually saying, I'm sorry, no. No, I mean my, no, sorry. 86 on the I mean my. Look at this shit.
It's kind of like there's this entire symphony going on.
Oh, yes.
And we're this little, almost minuscule mouse squeak in the corner. But we think this mouse squeak in the corner is the whole thing. But there's this symphony that's like huge.
Well, the I mean my,
mouse squeak.
You could say the I mean my, were it, if it had symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it's not real, and so it doesn't really have symptoms. But for the sake of exploring it, you could say I, me, mine is a myopic habit, a myopic reflex that can only be proud of itself by not paying attention. Once I, me, my, whatever that might be, starts to reconsider all of the evidence that's been presented to the jury, it's like, fuck. Whoa. There might not be I, me, my. Same evidence. I'm just looking at it differently, looking at it freshly. You know, that's the yoga of radiant presence, to coin a phrase. I've heard that someplace before. A refreshed reconsideration of the maddening elegance of your present experience could possibly result in a different conclusion than I, me, my. And that has more cojones than any remedial intervention. Because it's a rug pull at the basement, at the bottom. It's a rug pull at the bottom. You know, whereas any kind of remedial intervention is at least 30 floors up. You're not going to shake the building very well from 30 floors up. But if you pull the foundation out, like those clever fuckers that took down 911. That was no airplane. And they blew out the sub-basements. But that's another matter. That's too controversial.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense that you can just put an airplane into a skyscraper and take it down like that. That makes no sense.
You can't. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and instant vaporization in free fall. What weapon did that? Excuse me. What? A fire did that? Instant vaporization in free fall? What?
Yeah.
But it's funny how many engineers would be happy to buy the government story with no hesitation. That's how deep the... What is that thing? We talked about it before. When
just look at the difference.
Mass hysteria, you know, dissociative response to something that just can't be understood.
There's a mass between an airplane and that skyscraper.
I know.
Come on. You're not going to tip over. You're not even going to tip it over hard to make a dent. Getting it with an airplane. Something else. Have you taken it out?
Yeah, but 9/11 is just a kind of entertaining metaphor for one's egoic temerity, egoic tenacity.
I'm riding the government train.
It's your birthday.
They may suck me into the belly of the beast before it's all over. Who the hell knows?
There's all kinds of ways to make a living.
Jesus.
Hey, you could counsel sex offenders.
I used to take the Buddhist guidance that you do no harm in your vocation. I used to take that seriously and really consider myself a massive failure.
Do no harm in your vocation. What's left? Sell Buddhism. Right? That's the only thing that's left is sell Buddhism.
I love that.
And that turns out to be harming anyway.
On the Simpsons, so they like Marge and Homer take their family to therapy and said, well, I stole the Altoids from the waiting room, and that's all anybody's ever gotten from therapy.
Is that what Bart said?
That was Homer said.
Homer. All right. Go Homer.
Nice.
Awesome.
Real nice.
Jesus. People who make you food, they're good people, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you can't get on the people suck or the people are great bandwagon. Either way, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's just like a mixture.
You come back to the immediacy of what we refer to as present experience. There is no actual present experience, but we just suggest that as a metaphor. And by doing that, or at least playing with the notion that you could actually kind of catch up with present experience, you can't, but again, we play with it. So let's say you could catch up with present experience, meaning you can just kind of like, all right, what the fuck is this? What's going on? Right? And you can get a glimpse of the impersonal, serendipitous, radiant profusion of that this is occurring, and absolutely impersonally occurring. And that in itself, you know, it amounts to nothing, right? It's not really a remedy for anything.
Something you can take home. You know, we're not going to put it in the bag and bring it home and use it later.
By committing yourself to be a reduction sauce under your own gaze, you're simply watching yourself boil off.
I like your energy there.
But the revelation of, you know, non-dual unicity, and of course that's too thick, which in Wayne's parlance would be the revelation or the release from false sense of authorship, right, is just this. But you don't take up the call to either celebrate yourself or denigrate yourself for the appearance of authorship or the appearance of the cessation of authorship. It's not like Wayne Lickerman, as much as I loved him, used his own mnemonic device to release himself from suffering. He didn't. And yet we can report on, you know, liberation with any clever word forms. But that doesn't necessarily serve to release the aspirant because it's so quickly fetishized, right, as a subject-object thing or as a quality from which I'm suffering, that if I could will myself out of the quality, I wouldn't suffer anymore. That's the implication, you see. So even bringing up or repeating the false sense of authorship as why one is suffering as a perhaps key to release from suffering is, forgive me, it's not correct. It's misleading.
Is that after the effect too? After the fact, I meant? Or am I? Like that would just, okay, so if you practice mindfulness and you do the work and you remind yourself it's false sense of authorship.
Right,
and
yeah.
You realize you're selfing and you say, who thought that thought, you know?
Yeah, if you go, who am I?
Who am I?
And you notice,
yeah.
Right? You do everything that all the gurus have told you to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do it. You do everything the gurus have told you to do and you will end up with a slice of wasa bread and some cream cheese. That's all you'll end up with. Yeah, because none of the gurus that sell the remedies for you to consider got to their own realization through the application of that remedy. Not a single one of them. Ramana Maharshi did not wake up because he was sitting around going, who am I? He didn't.
Yeah.
Byron Katie did not wake up because she did the work on her misery. She did not. Wayne Lickerman did not wake up because he considered that he might be under the sway of a false sense of authorship. He did not. Peter Brown did not wake up because he was sitting around noticing. He didn't. You're not. Nirsagadatta did not wake up because he said, I am that. None of them. Not a single one. Not Ramakrishna, not Siddha Rameshwar. None of them. Not Jean Klein. Jean Klein was looking at some fucking geese.
Had he done anything before?
Sure. Of course. But isn't it weird that not a single one of, you could say, enviable personas or celebrities that have enjoyed the great, fantastic Wizard of Oz accomplishment of enlightenment got there by doing what they profess you should do?
It is pretty funny.
That's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah. Well.
What did the Buddha do? What did he? Was he sitting under the fucking Bodhi tree going, hamana, 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 hamana? No.
Ajahn Chah supposedly got there, but even he says that he couldn't get there that way, and he had to figure out a different way.
No. It's too weird.
He'll admit he was another failure at meditation. And he realized he couldn't get there.
And what's the nature of the revelation?
But
well,
that because the whole idea is like, it's just mysterious, and you can't, I mean, we're all here. We're here tonight. We're here.
That's a good idea. It's all mysterious.
It's all mysterious.
Doesn't do anything for me, you know. I mean, not saying just me. I mean, it doesn't do anything for anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all mysterious. Yeah. Next.
That's fine.
Right. Yeah. Can I get a half a pound of the Alpine Swiss? It's all mysterious. And that roast beef looks good.
Well, that does something, right?
Yeah.
Taste it. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
May not make you enlightened, but might make you feel...
Well, who cares about enlightenment when you're eating salmon spread on a wasa toast? Fuck that.
Life is good.
I mean...
I guess enlightenment is always only an issue when you're...
When you don't have salmon spread.
When you don't have salmon spread. Or if you're just eating a dry wasa cracker and you're like, this sucks.
Oh, yeah, dry wasa? Bad news.
If only I was enlightened, because this is so
master,
dry.
Master.
There's no fat in it.
I got some dry wasa bread. Clearly that's not enough. Go in search of spread. And bring back some cold ones. Mm-hmm. You see, once you suggest that there is a genesis or an explanation for the appearance of suffering, you're fucked. Now you've justified it by thinking that you know why the imagination of suffering occurs, and then you go on to suggest, oh, like the Buddha did, what a jerk, you know. Oh, suffering occurs because of the false sense of authorship. No, it doesn't. Suffering occurs because of attraction and aversion. No, it doesn't. Sorry, it does not. But you can see how easy it is to enroll. Well, Wayne told me it was the FSA, so I got to get over that as soon as possible. The Buddha told me it was attraction and aversion. Therefore, I am going to, right, avoid the world, wear robes, take vows, and commit myself to no more attraction and aversion, and good luck. It's not going to work.
It's a manipulation, usually. You buy into that stuff because you want an angle into alleviating yourself.
The release, if there is a release, and there's not really a release because there's nothing that's ever been incarcerated. So incarceration in terms of a preponderance of imposition or the release from preponderance of imposition are absolutely mythic. That's thin. That's a thin slice. Because you can only hint at poetically why the apparition of suffering may be appearing as the apparition of suffering. You can only hint at it for fun. Chutes and ladders. Mealborns. However that's pronounced. You can't say why. And that's fun, because if you can't say why the apparition of suffering is appearing, then it could be, perhaps as liberatingly mysterious as liberation is liberatingly mysterious. Now you're not imposed upon, not by suffering or even the release from suffering. You don't even care about it anymore. Right? Right? I say right like as if it's right. It's not right. It's, you know, it's just, who knows? Who knows what the fuck? If you look into the, let's call it the root evidence for the presumption of continuity of self, you're just going to find an incredible field of absolute discontinuous abstraction. If you think that everything that you've thought and experienced is the actually evidence for the continuity of you, you haven't looked closely enough. You're only considering the profusion of your own mentality to be evidence for the continuity or the genesis of you. That's because you're not looking close enough. If you look really close at it, you're like, no, this is just a bunch of bullshit.
Well, it's not a look close at it, like use your mind to look close and analyze. And
no, it's not that.
Not like that.
But it can feel like that. I mean, you use mind, you use vocabulary, you use practices, you use devotions, you use purifications. You use everything at your disposal on the journey of taking a really intimate look at the presence of experiencing itself.
What else are you going to do?
What else are you going to do? You know, do another salmon spread, maybe. Are we done? It's 2 a.m.
That's the thing.
Oh, night sky slumber party.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Like, where are we?
It's, 9:08.
Oh, okay.
We've done enough. We don't need to beat this any longer. We'll beat it again tomorrow.
We'll beat off again tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. See you around.